GAA on Off the Ball.
Now then, Dermot McGrath is in the studio. You're very welcome. Nice to have you with
us.
We are going to talk to you about a few different things. You're in here with Electric Ireland. They're obviously a big part of the minor championship. You played in the minor final, so we'll come to that. Let's talk about a few other things. Firstly, we'll get on to Kilkenny Tipperary. How's life for you now, watching from afar, itching to get in?
Yeah, it's different, I suppose. You know, just back from a two-week holiday. Went off, dropped the bomb on the Sunday game on the Sunday night, went off early in the Monday morning, 4 o'clock in the morning on after the show, if you like. So 2 good weeks in terms of relaxation. So
you might have been better off getting out of town.
Yeah, might have been. That's probably the reality. Yeah, look, interesting one in that. Initially, I actually felt a bit liberated, and then I kind of said to myself, hang on, there's been a bit of self-indulgence here, there's a bit of lingering hurt after kind of finding its way out through my thought process, and I didn't think it was probably the appropriate form or platform for it, even though the points I were making, I felt, you know, I'd feel strongly about those things in terms of the innovation or the way the game has changed, but I'd say the platform for it was incorrect, and I learned from it, you know.
I think you're being a bit harsh on yourself. The programme was 105 minutes long. Mm. This was a 5-6 minute conversation. I found it the most interesting part of the programme, if that's okay to say.
Mm.
At one point, Des Cal said to you, did you ever feel you got a raw deal or your team were analysed badly? You only answered the question.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Des said, what did you make of the half-back line today? And you said, Des, I want to go back to 2016.
Maybe. Look,
I thought the reaction was madness. Now, the remnants in the British culture line, for me, was just too clever by half, and maybe it just kind of hung over the whole thing. Yeah. But I thought the conversation up to that point was actually a very interesting, relevant conversation to be having.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was surprised at the fallout.
Yeah, it was interesting in that, as I said, I went to the Bowl Fungarola straight away on the Monday morning, or early Monday morning, and kind of turned off the phone, but I nearly felt initially, I said to myself, Jesus, this is going to kind of blow, like, you know, and you're not kind of insecure, and you're kind of saying to yourself, hang on, what did I say? I was actually more mad about the reaction to the college statement in terms of, I was doing a bit of research, as is your job, ahead of any kind of weekend of hurling, and I was going through the Limerick team. I was saying to myself, Nicky Quaid, Tralee IT, doing the Hibernia course now, Sean Finn, UL. Mm. And I went through the 15 of them and said, Jesus, they've all gone through third level. And then I went through the Waterford team of 17 and I said, God, they all went through third level. Mm. And it was more kind of, it wasn't that there's not a room for a farmer or a mechanic or someone on shift work in terms of playing hurling. It was more the absolute statistical difference between 20 years ago in terms of what people are doing and societal change reflective of hurling change, if you like. And I was mad that the suggestion would be that, you know, you have to go to college to play hurling. I wasn't kind of saying that. I know the point. Maybe I'm preaching to converted here, but I.
No, it is the thing though, because I have an insight into this.
Mm.
You can't make nuanced, intelligent, factual points, which is what you were doing. It was an interesting observation. Mm. I didn't know that.
Mm.
I hadn't looked at the various players and seen, oh, geez, they've all gone to third level. It was an interesting point, and you were giving your own theory as to how that might change their demands on a manager.
Yeah.
But like, so if you're going to worry at some lad taking what you're saying, twisting it, throwing it up on Twitter, and then 1,000 people getting angry, it's going to be crack.
Yeah, it's not even a worry, but it's something I'm passionate about because, like, I'm heavily invested and embedded in the Leaving Cert Applied course in our school, you know, which is the old-fashioned pre-employment from when I went to school, where guys are different learning capabilities, different learning capacities, and they might steer towards apprenticeships, they might steer towards PLCs. Very clever lads, very able lads. They might steer towards, as I said, apprenticeships. And I'm embedded in that. And, you know, the suggestion that was some sort of academic snobbery or whatever, you know, from a fellow who, my parents both left, had no secondary school education. But if we had a maths problem, we were straight to dad to solve that problem. So I think it was more like, why are they doing it? Why is there so many players going to college? And is it a reflection of society and how it's changed as a whole? Or is it, hang on, I have Monday to recovery after a match, I have the Fitzgibbon, I have the social aspect of it, and plus, in tandem with that, I have the possible career path that is suitable to hurling as well. And I'm interested more in the statistical evidence as opposed to 20 years ago. So I'm going to sit down over the winter now and say to myself, what was the case 20 years ago as opposed to now? And even yesterday, Joe, the Leaving Cert results, you have 33% of people doing higher level maths as opposed to 16% 10 years ago. Why are they stretching themselves? You know, and is that not a reflection of what you have nowadays in the hurling concepts? You know, in the world of inter-county hurling, I'm going for it, and I'll get the career going as well. I'll travel. And I just think we just need to be more in tune with those things, you know?
Yeah. I never interpreted for a second as lads who don't go to college aren't smart enough to play hurling. That was a million miles away from what you were saying.
Yeah.
You were dealing in the fact. You were saying, this is an interesting phenomenon. Yeah. Why is this, I wonder?
Yeah, and another anecdote on that. Mm. When I was the Waterford manager, Philip Manny, Tadhg de Bourcq and Dara Fies were living in the one house in Dublin. And they were living with Matt O'Hanlon, Noel McGrath, Killian Buckley, Walter Walsh. They're all in the one house in Dublin. So you can imagine the sharing of information in that house. In the off-season, they're having a few pints.
Yeah.
And they're saying, what are you doing now? What's your strength and conditioning policy? What's your strength or nutrition and policy?
Yeah.
What are you doing? How are you training? How many nights a week are you at it? Right, there's lockdown when they meet each other in championship, but there's the sharing of information. And there's also then, that buys into the whole theory around the sweeper thing, which is, what's your game plan? How are we going to go about it?
Mm.
And I think there's more of a kind of a thirst for that than is perhaps sometimes portrayed, you know?
It's very interesting when you say the sweeper thing. If ever a phrase has now become redundant in its inability to explain everything that's going on, it's like they play a sweeper, as if that explains all you need to know about how they're playing. Like, I was looking at Wexford in that semi-final.
Yeah.
And if this is where the game's going, I'm all signed up. I thought it was brilliant. And they're playing an attacking brand of hurling.
Yeah.
I don't really care if they have a sweeper here or there. And no one wants to watch two sweepers poke the ball to each other for 70 minutes. But I don't think that was ever where, certainly you, even when at the start of the sweeper thing, that's never where you saw it going, I never felt.
No, and I think we're reaching the end of the conversation, gladly, I think. I think it actually, if anything, the debate will actually fuel a thirst for a different direction, and even in terms of conversing about it. So it's a total kind of hurling approach. There's a totality of approach. There's wing backs can go, everyone can go. In actual fact, I remember watching that day in the studio, I remember watching Davey saying to Kevin Foley, can you be focusing on the lip reading? He was just saying, go for it. Now, it wasn't for the camera's sake, he was just saying, go for it, go for it, go for it. Protect where necessary, where possible, and then you just go, and everyone attack from deep, and everyone is communicating what the jobs they know, if you like. And then the scores come from unpredictable manner. Even in 17, I think Kevin and Jamie scored 5-20 from play between the two of them because they acted as the sixth forward. And the argument, I suppose, that I would put forward is that the teams that are, I suppose, where it's espoused that they play conventional hurling, they actually limit their numbers that they play up front at any stages. You know? So I think it's a debate that's worn out, and it's a drum that I'm probably tired of beating, and people are probably tired of hearing me beating it. So, you know, I'm going to move on in a certain degree, but yet stick to the principles that, to me, planning is a huge element of the whole thing.
And aside from that Sunday game night and the fallout, have you enjoyed punditry? Is it something that you can see yourself doing as long as you're out of the game?
I have enjoyed it. I like the element of it that where you can work hard, where you can actually work hard when you can see something, not that's different, but you can say to yourself, hang on, I've noticed that. I've noticed something different here. I've noticed the communication of information. And I'm a bit of an anorak when it comes to the hurling in terms of, you know, I think about it all the time at home even. You know, so I'm kind of, I'd like to be detail related, and so relating the detail in and trying to impart it in a manner where people understand it, and you're not losing that kind of the focus of people that you're trying to bring with you, I suppose, in terms of analysis, where it's not kind of portrayed as, you know, we were trying to bring that kind of people with you, saying, and it's a simple game, you know, approach, where you're trying to actually marry the simple game approach with the complexities of what's going on.
Some people enjoy different things about it. For some people, it's a simple game, and they like talking about a team who has character and, you know, manliness, and they want to talk about the one-on-one battles, and that's how they see the game, and that's how they watch it. There's plenty of pundits out there who see it in those terms. That's fine as well. But you're allowed to say, well, I think there's a bit more going on here in certain aspects that's worth actually pointing out.
Yeah, and it's a deeper debate in the fact that, you know, it's almost kind of categorised the traditionalist and the revisionist.
Yeah,
I don't like that because it's like
the civil service versus the private sector.
There's a fusion of the thought process. I've taught in school for 20 years now. And you go out hurling every day after school with the kids in first and second year. You're not talking about sweeper system. You're talking about hurling. You're talking about skills. You're talking about attitude. You're talking about development of their character. You're talking about hurling games. You're enjoying it. You're involved in it. As time goes on, then you'll hear it coming across from the clubs or from the development squads. How are we going to play? What way are we going about it? And I think there's the crossover in terms of information is when they want to kind of grow their development in terms of what they want to learn and what they want to apply, but not losing sight of the traditional principles. So that's why I actually think, you know, this categorising of people are traditionalists and I think it's completely kind of wrong, you know.
It is. And also I think it's unfair on the traditionalists because what you're actually saying is old fashioned, dark ages, dinosaur, and that's wrong too.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, that's going to keep on rolling.
And no one would be saying that. I think it's the fusion of old-fashioned principles with innovation is the perfect fusion for any team moving forward.
This is a tough question, but could you give me a checklist of the big tactical innovations or shifts in the game that you look out for in a game now? First 5 minutes when you're watching a game, where is it going? What kind of are the big cutting edge things that are happening that we should all be looking out for?
Yeah, well, I think ahead of Sunday, you're probably going to look out for initially, this is not even tactically, matchups. Will Brendan Maher pick up TJ Reid? And therefore, if he does pick him up, will TJ Reid bring him into unknown territory? Will he bring him into full forward, where Brendan has played on Aaron Gillan for a while, in fairness, this year? I think you're going to look as well in terms of the Kilkenny puck out setup. You know, will Walter Welsh, TJ Reid and John Donnelly retreat 15-20 yards off their men? Will they form a cordon across the middle of the field with the two midfielders there, sitting in front of Conor Fogarty, sitting in front of Pádraig Welsh, sitting in front of Paddy Deegan? That will have a situation where they'll allow the 10-11 and 12 from Tip and the 10-11 and 12 from Kilkenny just almost dual roles. So if you're right half forward, John Donnelly, you're matching up against Dan McCormack or Niall O'Mara at 12, and that allows Conor Fogarty to sit. The other interesting one for me is to watch Pádraig Maher's role. If Brendan Maher goes to centre-back to pick up TJ Reid, and Pádraig Maher goes to left half-back, and say he picks up Walter Walsh in an obvious physical matchup, will Pádraig Maher and Will Sheedy have said, like, listen, we're willing to concede 2-3 points to Walter Walsh, you just not hug the D, but tuck in there, and we'll have keep Fenley then in terms of we'll cut down the space in front of Fenley, which is something we would have done with Waterford, but Dara Fives would have picked up Walter Walsh, but we would have said to Dara, listen, don't mind conceding 2 or 3 points to Walter Welsh. You tuck as well, and we'll protect that full back line as well. So I think there's evidence there that would suggest that both teams will go about it in that particular manner, that even though it'll be probably, you know, the retrospectively will be talked about as kind of a conventional final, I think, you know, from a lot of avenues. I think you'll see a lot of intriguing things going on. You might see Dan McCormack come from centre for. You might see Dan McCormack lie on Pádraig Welsh and say to himself, we have to take down one of the pillars here, so we're going to take down Pádraig Welsh, the most fluent hurler of the Kilkenny backline, if you like, in the driving force, so we might go after him. And the suggestion there in one of the books, either Cummins or Lark Corbett's book, where O'Shea said we're going to take down the pillars of the team, JJ Delaney and Tommy Walsh, so will they attack what they feel are the kind of the main kind of, you know, pillars of the Tipperary of the Kilkenny team, if you like, Tipperary. So that they're the interesting things for me in terms of, you know, John Donnelly's role the last time, right half forward, but he might as well been kind of a right half back in terms of how deep he was. So there's loads of things going on. Yeah,
you've experienced All-Ireland final week. Can you give us a memory, be it personal or what it was like trying to rack your brains coming up with a plan from that week, the build-up, trying to manage the players? What was it like?
Yeah, it was different, I suppose, for us in that it was a kind of, not a novel final, but a final whereby ourselves in Galway, the perception was, this is the final everyone wanted, the dynamic, the colour, etc. So a little bit different. A couple of memories stand out. The Conor Gleeson incident, and even retrospectively now, I look at young McKillen getting off for the minor for Galway, and I say to myself, Jesus, could I have done more for Conor Gleeson? So I remember the Monday week previous to it, I went to Conor's house and we chatted with the mam, and we went up to the appeal that night, and we had no looking appeal, and we decided to park it almost based on the fact that we had dragged out Tadhg Na Burka's appeal and almost kind of said, we don't need the distraction of this. And I often look back and I said to myself, should we have brought the Conor Gleeson one right to the edge, right to the DRA, right to the last minute, because he was a key player for us. You know, and that's a kind of, I suppose, a roundabout answer. In terms of the week of it, trying to get the emotion right of the dressing room, I remember trying to get the, you know, hone in on something that was, you know, would give an edge, if you like. And, you know, I remember we had done it for Tadhg in the semi-final, fairly emotive dressing room. And with Conor Gleeson, I tried something similar. I was nearly overly emotive inside in the dressing room where we were talking about Conor's family. He had, you know, a younger brother killed in a farming accident a number of years ago in tragic circumstances. Right. And just remember kind of honing in on that in the dressing room and just saying to myself, Jesus, I'm after overdoing it here. That's in the dressing room on the day of the match. And fellas were very emotive.
Actually the Munster team talk about in one of their first early European Cup finals.
Yeah, that's right. The Northampton match. Yeah. I read that. It just went over the top in terms of, you know.
I think the night before they stood around and asked everybody to say what Munster meant to them.
Yeah.
And sure, an hour later, everybody was drained emotionally.
Yeah.
That was the night before, even in the dressing room.
The problem was we had followed a similar kind of avenue with Tadhg
in
the semi final.
It's
the ability to be able to change according to the situation that it is in front of you. We were just trying to focus on not being passive, not being receptive, and we did the opposite, like in terms of Galway steamrollers for the first 5 or 6 minutes. But even tactically, I remember thinking to myself, you know, Philip Manny was picking Joe Kenny, and Brick was going right half forward, but he was instructed to kind of support Shane Bennett in a two-man full forward line, and he'd go there with Hanbury, and because Hanbury would go with him, the space would open up for Kenny to come into it. And I just remember thinking that, for even in retrospect now, for the first 15 minutes, it just should have gone with no full forward line at all. Like, you know, just to make a complete bomb site of it, if you like, for want of a better phrase. And these are things that just kind of, you know, stick out. And the night before the All-Ireland, we were in Johnstone House, and I remember just allowing myself on an individual level watch up for the match, you know, and I was watching, you know, I was saying to myself, it's Micheál, I wouldn't say Micheál is watching this, you know, almost on an individual level, I was kind of saying, fuck it, I'm wrong. And a good friend from Tyrone then texts me then, just as I was going to bed then, he texts me, he said, geez, I hope you didn't see what Babs wrote about you in the paper today, you know.
He did,
yeah. I just said to him, he said, Christ, you know, a good, so much for a good friend, not on the same wavelength. As I said to myself, Jesus. And then he sent me a picture of the art deal, you know.
That's like a caddy.
Just before.
Player, don't hit it in the water on the left.
Just before I went to sleep, like, and he sent me a picture saying, if Waterford don't win tomorrow, Derek McGrath should be sacked. Or it's kind of the headling, you know. But look, I suppose sensationalism alive and well. But I remember going to bed and I had a little bit of kind of a wry smile on the back of that. But, you know, so look, that, they are the things you kind of, you're looking for an edge and you go through yourself personally, you know. But I think when it's a novel, finally, you'd learn from that, you know.
And what was it like for your family that week?
Yeah, I think it was enjoyable. Right. It was the first time that it was enjoyable, which is, on reflection, mightn't have been a good thing. You know, in terms of the absolute focus on winning the game.
Mm. You know, more on edge.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, it was enjoyable. It was kind of almost like a great to be there type.
Yes, party atmosphere a little
bit.
Yeah,
you know, great to be there. Like, Mam and Dad would never go to a social occasion involving hurling, but they had tickets for the banquet. You know, my aunt and uncle, my late aunt and my uncle were going to the banquet. You know, it was a celebratory feel.
Yes. Look what we've achieved. We should enjoy this almost.
Oh, yeah, and I often, just going along in the car, I often say to myself, geez, I could learn so much from, you know, I don't think we, you know, we got a lot right in the build-up, but just even in terms of just the organisational things that had to be done around tickets, around suits, around, I was a control freak, you know, I was involved in everything. I was involved in everything, and I was a poor delegator in the run-up to the final. Not that there wasn't help there was loads of help there.
You just wanted to do it yourself.
Yeah.
It's understandable.
I just said to myself then, if I had my time back and you're in the final, I'd just say, completely concentrate on the Tuesday night back, the first Tuesday night back. This is how we're going to do it. This is what we're going to do. You know, just even watching Gavin the other night with the Monday night press slot, you know, it was almost like, we'll get this out of the way, kind of. You know, and you learn so much from watching great people from afar, you know.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not easy. And did you get time away in the midst of all that madness? Because it sounds very intense, especially if you're not delegating brilliantly. We've spoken before, you know, you wouldn't be averse to going on a retreat and taking time for yourself. Mm-hmm. Did you try and do that in the midst of a week and have quiet time?
I won't tell a lie. We won the semi-final on the Sunday. I think it was the 17th of August at the time. I'm not particularly sure. And my family were out on holidays in Mallorca. And I went out on the Tuesday and came back on the Wednesday for training. So Monday we had meetings all day around, you know, ticket allocations, trying to get the things out of the way, trying to organise the media day for the following Monday. And Tuesday I took off on a plane for one night, and I went out there on Tuesday morning. I went out there Tuesday morning and came back on Wednesday afternoon. We were training Wednesday night. So I got away to the family. But even whilst out there was kind of a little part of me saying, there's no way Micheál O'Donoghue's out here. You know, I know that sounds...
No, it sounds, makes absolute sense.
There's no way Micheál O'Donoghue's out on holidays now. He is planning, like, and he is planning for this game. But he's kind of, you know, he's probably has his troops in and he has everything sorted. And I'm out here, kind of, you know, in an Irish bar with people kind of looking and saying, it's just Derek McGrath. What's he doing here? You know what I mean? He shouldn't be here. You know, all those things can permeate their way to your mindset as well, which is something to definitely learn from, you know.
Are you over it now?
I'm not over being out of inter-county management. I'm not over the loss. Because I think about what we could have done differently. Yeah. Because it's hard to explain in that, Joe, when you're from Waterford and you haven't won in All-Ireland since 1959.
Yeah.
There's Mayo syndrome there. You know, there's an absolute craving for success.
Yeah.
So it's a different dynamic than what Liam Sheedy and Brian Cody will experience the weekend.
Yeah,
it's a completely different dynamic, you know. I'd say it was just a button was pressed in Kilkenny when they qualified for the final, and the fundraisers were rolled out, Langton's was rolled out, and the ticket allocation was just as poor as it has been the last 25 years.
Yes.
So it's different, you know. It's easy to say, you know, that you should do it like this way, but the machine, like, efficiency of Tip and Kilkenny from being used to it is not evident in Waterford. So it's a learning process.
Yeah, I'm sure. What's your attitude to going back in now as manager?
Well, I got a text while we were away to say that the Porrig had stepped down. My mind is muddled on it in terms of my wife. I said to my wife, you know, would I be mad going back to that? And she said, you'd be completely mad, you know. And I said, well, I'm in between, you know, and that's the way I've been all week. There's part of me thinking it's too soon.
Yeah.
It's part of me thinking my young lad is in first year, will I get him to junior cert? You know, the oldest boy, will get him to junior cert and have a go at something in 2 years' time. There's part of me thinking there's good people in Waterford that would like a stab at it. Not that you shouldn't be ruthless enough. You know, if you want to do it, you go for it. Like, and so that's where I'm at. I haven't thought about it, but I'm beginning to think about it, if you like. But I'm in between, I suppose, because you've no divine right to automatically just say, I want to, you know, I'm going to go for it and I'm going to get it. But, and I think it's, you have to have all your energy, all your wits about you, you know what I mean?
Just about to say, it's not something you can decide half-assed.
No.
Like, you can't be in any way muddled if you come to the conclusion, I'm going to go for this. You can't, on some level, be thinking, oh, my son, should I be getting him to junior cert? Or am I a bit mad? Like, it needs to be all in.
100%. And the last time I went for it, I was completely all in.
Yeah.
And it was... Even applying for the job the last time, I was completely kind of immersed in the whole process of getting the interview stuff ready, getting the video analysis ready for the interview, you know, preparing a presentation that would be, you know, suitable for the board, for the ex-players that were going to be part of the interviewing committee. And there was no ambiguity in my thought process. Well, there's definite ambiguity now, which suggests like that ultimately there's probably only 20% of me saying, and there's only one way to do it, you know.
And did you go back teaching in the off year?
Yeah, I've been back enjoying it, I've been back. I had my own son in first year class as well, which is interesting. So, I've been back. I was involved with the first year hurlers in school, and you know, I don't want to say I had a lazy year, but I had a year where I put a lot into the teaching and watching then what was developing in the game. But I didn't plan in the year to be ready to go back into inter-county management.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Do you know what? Sometimes you say to yourself, you nearly need every training session planned, and then you need to be able to improvise. You need to be able to. I found myself even reading bits of books as opposed to, you know, just the full book, you know, and then saying, oh, I'd use that now if I got a chance again. You know, not having
no
even
timeline
the...
timeline on it.
Yeah, you know, so I think September to Christmas will be good in terms of rest and in terms of just no hurling as such and just kind of, you know, dip in and out of a few things.
And what was it about not being involved that you missed the most?
I think an old-fashioned answer, if you like, the camaraderie, the togetherness, the unity that we had in victory and defeat, and I missed being able to help, and I missed them being able to help me, I suppose. You know what I mean? As regards just the buzz.
Yeah.
I love that period between October and January when you're training.
Yeah.
I love that period.
Right, I would have thought that'd be the slog.
Would you believe? I love the winter, you know? I love the winter. I'm a very strange fish in that regard. I love the hat on, and I love being out in driving players during the winter slog. I love that part of it.
Why do you think you do?
Well, I think I do because I don't know. I always like. It sounds a bit off the wall now, but I always like open fires and sitting up with them and watching Sky Sports News or watching the telly and watching what's going on, and then going out for a walk. And I like the hard work. I like that when you know you've the slog done the winter, that there's a feeling there that you've really, really worked hard, and there's a feeling that perhaps you're getting an edge by not doing what nobody else is doing, but when you can see it in front of you, it's powerful, you know? You can
see
it in front of you.
A sense of almost getting close to your potential and fulfilling it.
Yeah, and a sense of we're getting a proper pre-season in here that's going to be hugely beneficial, that's, you know, that the boys' their attitude is really, and you're forming something in terms of a unity of purpose, or you're forming something in terms of the character resolve.
Mm.
All those principles that we've said at the start of the show that go hand in hand with, this is how we're going to do it, you know, as well, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting you use the word purpose there, because that's what strikes me about, you know, Paul O'Connell did an interview with Malachy Clerk, and I remember about a year ago now, and they were, you know, chatting away, and O'Connell almost stumbled upon it in the interview. It was an interesting chat, and he kind of said, I've realised what I miss the most is not having this sense of purpose every day, driving sense of purpose. I know they've got family and various other things, but like a plan in motion and working towards something is a kind of thrilling thing and gets you out of bed.
Yeah, and it's
gives your life an intensity.
It's almost intangible as well. It's almost, it's very hard to kind of put your finger on how to explain what it is. It's just a feeling, like it's a kind of a gut instinct that's not measurable. You know, it's just something that unfolds in front of your eyes, and it then makes it easier to deal with victories or losses.
Yes.
You know, it makes it easier because there's kind of been an honesty to what you're trying to do.
Mm.
As I'm sure there has been with most inter-county setups around the country, you know, but it's particularly powerful when it's in your own county.
Increasingly, I forget lots of chats I have with people in here because there's so many over the years. The one thing I always remember you saying to me about you and the Waterford team, and it kind of captured the bond, is when you were saying you were away, I think it was a monastery or somewhere for a few days, and you're lighting the candles, but you lit them in the formation of the team, of the players you're going to play. And there was just something so lovely about that. It's always stuck with me.
Yeah, I'd have strange habits like that, you know. I would have always had a ritual, or I went to the cathedral before the games, and I just have strange habits. I might go up to De La Salle College. I said this before to you, that I'm a hypocritical Catholic. I only pray when I want something, you know. But I would have had a ritual where I might go up to the school, even the school have a lovely prayer room. The brothers still live in our school, you know. And I'd go into the prayer room and I'd say St. Joseph's, you know, kind of a prayer to St. Joseph. Then I'd go down to the cathedral and I'd light the candles and I'd kind of light them in the formation and I'd say they're going to do the business for us today. You know what I mean? You know, lighting, you might put three in the full four and you light the three bottom candles and say we're going to, and light one on top in a triangular shape and say that's, I know, look, it's a lot off the wall, but
no,
look,
it's not.
Everyone has their own, kind of, you know, everyone has their own little kind of ways of doing things and people perceive them perhaps as being a bit odd, but they're your ways, you know what I mean?
I don't think they're odd. So you had 14 men behind the ball and then just one up top, is that?
one 13 one, I think, as the lads say about Tyrone. I don't know how true that is either.
I'll get on to the minor match in 1 second. Who do you actually think is going to come out between Kilkenny and Tipperary? We had Shane Dowling here on the Tuesday night after the Kilkenny defeat, and he had an extraordinary thing to say. He said, we never faced a team with that kind of intensity, especially first 20 minutes. So will Tip handle that physicality and that aggression that Kilkenny are going to bring as a starting point?
I think they'll bring it themselves, if I'm honest. That'd be my feeling on it. I think Tip are going to bring huge intensity. And why? Why? Because I think the general perception in Kilkenny that perhaps has permeated its way around the Tip situation for a while is that if you get it into the face of Tipperary, that they'll fold. Mm. That there's a flakiness there, if you like. And it's not just from comments that have been made in, you know, in Jackie Tyrrell's book. Right? I think Sheedy will be a master at twisting that. So you can question our hurling, you can question our speed, you can question our fitness, you can question whatever, but you're really questioning the integrity of your character. And I think that should bring a volatile Tip, if you like, you know, a right on the edge Tip, whereby, now it won't be talked about Monday, we'd say we never referenced anything like that, that won't be talked about in the aftermath. Mm. So I think Tip are going to bring that. Undoubtedly, Kilkenny are going to meet that head on.
Mm.
I'm with, I heard Owen Kelly interviewed yesterday, I think Tip will find a way to get scores. You know, I think, you know, John McGrath, disappointing to be sent off in the semi-final, motivation, I think he'd have a huge couple of weeks preparation, almost inherently saying, look, I'm not going to leave the lads down. I think Bubbles came off, just as watching it close, he had a little bit of a shake of the head when he came off at the semi-final, despite the fact he got 3 points. Just a little shake of the head. And I remember in the run-up to this final of 16, he was carrying an injury and they played him and he played well. So I think there's big games in some of the guys that had mid-season blips, if you like. And I think they'll be back up to the level they were at in Cork, but it's going to be tight, you know.
Yeah, everyone has that sense, all right. And the minor final, I mean, our coverage of the minor championship is brought to you by Electric Ireland. There's nothing minor about playing minor. You played the 92 minor final, was it?
Yeah.
You marked Micheál Donoghue?
I did for a period, didn't it? Yeah.
Is this fella just always on your mind since then, is he? I wonder, is Micheál watching this tonight on TV?
I was 10 stone and had a full head of blondie hair as well. So.
Well, speaking of that, actually, I like this. Electric Ireland is offering free championship haircuts. That's right, free championship haircuts to fans in Croke Park between 11:30 and 1:00. The Cusack stand side, this is before the minor final this weekend, 11:30 to 1:00 if you want a free championship haircut. And you're the man they've chosen to promote this.
Yeah, I'm doing a head and shoulders ad next week. So, look.
It's a bit of fun.
It's a full fade for me for a while, as I said already. But yeah, look, it's we have a particular interest in the minor final in that the captain of the minor team, James Aylward in Kilkenny, is a student in our school. Yeah. Lovely lad, great ambassador for the school. So
we were just saying before we came on air, it's the same names. Another Aylward.
Oh, yeah. We wish him well, you know, we wish him well. And look, it goes back to the Kilkenny conveyor belt kind of argument or debate, you know. I mean, even the senior, at senior level, I think there's 40 All Ireland medals with the starting 15 of Kilkenny next weekend, you know. And I think
we almost talk about them as the inexperienced
the transition,
new team.
Our new team, you know. And in terms of the minor, I think it's Richie Mulrooney's fifth final, the manager, and I watched them nearly every minor game now. I saw Waterford playing all their matches. Limerick were the team for me. I thought Limerick were going to win the championship. Best player in the, thus far I'd seen was Cathal O'Neill from Limerick, and then Kilkenny turned up in the semi-final. Billy Drennan, Young Clifford, James Elwer driving him from the middle of the field. Serious outfit. The challenge is Galway, in that, you know, Galway raced into a 12 or 13 point lead and asked them to play Kilkenny. Kilkenny pegged them back to 2 or 3 points.
Right.
McGlynn at centre back, his suspension has been overturned, which is another issue in terms of Conor Gleeson's suspension. I say to myself, Jesus, why didn't we go after that?
Yeah.
So, interesting challenge now for Kilkenny. I hope Kilkenny win, but I have a feeling Galway will do it.
Mm. How does minor hurling compare to what's going on at senior level tactically and in terms of its general flow?
I think the general perception is that it's a little bit more innocent and open, and that's the, you know, the purest form you hear espoused. It doesn't take from the point, I think, that the Galway team of 2 years ago under Geoffrey Linsky, the last 2 years, we say, very tactically aware that if one day All-Ireland would have kind of retreated, leave a deep six there, all their players would flood back the field. They were very tactically adept. So there's tactics definitely evident within the minor. Mm. But I think the easy thing to say is just it's a flowing game. You know, Wexford, for instance, set up with seven at the back against, in a direct kind of template of how their seniors have played against Galway, if you like. So yeah, look, there's a real purity. There's a purity to the occasion, I think, as much as there is to anything else. You know, and it's different as well. 92. I just couldn't wait for it to be over, but you're just planning for the aftermath and the crack and everything. Whereas I think now the guys are going back to the early point around college and that, they're able to deal with the situation. They're focusing in on the game, and they're not as kind of, you know, focused on the aftermath.
Did you win in 92? Sorry.
No, we were beaten. Donoghue again. And a guy, Conor O'Donovan, I was marking for a while, he got man of the match, so it was a nightmare all around for myself, you know.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's a pleasure having you and good to talk to you again. I guess you have some thinking to do about your future, if you're going to give it another lash or not. But either way, we'll be seeing you one side of the TV camera or another. Derek McGrath, thanks a mil.
Thanks, Joe. GAA on Off the Ball.